You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Everybody, and welcome to Curiosity Invited. I'm David Bryan, and that other gentleman on the screen, the one with more hair on his face than I have, is Samuel Marquis. Well, interesting fellow. By trade, he is a hydrogeologist, and we won't be talking about that much. but that's not the reason he's here. He is here because on the event of, did it just come out? Did the book actually just get published?
1 week ago.
1 week ago.
Last Tuesday.
So Samuel, this is not his first book. He has written several others. Samuel Marquis wrote a book about what turns out it is his, what is it? Ninth great grandfather, Captain William Kidd. William Kidd, the notorious pirate. And the book is called Captain Kidd, A True Story of Treasure and Betrayal. What got in your head that said, I really want to write this book about Captain Kidd?
Well, Captain Kidd is actually my 12th book. And so I kind of started out writing environmental thrillers because I'm a hydrogeologist. And then I evolved into kind of espionage and then pretty much just historical fiction, but very heavily factual historical fiction that's basically narrative nonfiction.
Right.
In the last 5 books. And so I started to just write this book. I'd written a book on Blackbeard, you know, the famous pirate who shares the honor with Captain Kidd. They're kind of the co-top pirates. Most famous is Captain Kidd and Blackbeard, with Henry Morgan, Sir Henry Morgan, a distant third to those two. And only because he's plastered on a rum bottle. Captain Morgan. So I was writing, I started the book as just historical fiction, but again, heavily factual historical fiction. And I was halfway through it and I said, what am I doing? This is ridiculous. I need to write the definitive biography on my ninth great grandfather, Captain William Kidd. I wasn't sure I could. You know, I hadn't done a huge nonfiction with, you know, this has 94 pages of endnotes and bibliography, but I'm a scientist, so I've published a lot of scientific papers and stuff. So it was in me, you know, scholarly work, biography of Captain Kidd, but it ended up being exactly what I should have been doing my last, you know, five or six books, because I'm really good at. You know?
And I will say, and I didn't read the whole thing, but I read big chunks of it, because it doesn't read like a stuffy nonfiction. It is very well. It's written in a very compelling way. So you know, if somebody's gonna, well, I don't read nonfiction. It's too that's not the case here. It's a good read.
It's a scholarly work though. So I kind of want to put that in there because you know the author always just wants it to read really fast. So. But, you know, it has 94 pages of endnotes and bibliography. But, yes, it reads like it's narrative nonfiction.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it reads, you know.
It reads like somebody's telling you a story.
It's fast-paced, so.
Yeah, it's definitely well-paced. So, I mean, you know, $64,000 question, I guess it's not worth as much as it used to be when that quiz show was on. But Captain Kidd. William Kidd has long been a notorious pirate, a scoundrel, a pirate, you know, a killer, a murderer, all those things. And you say, no, that's just not true. So why do you think two pieces to this, but first, why do you think this enduring story? I mean, the evidence is there. You were able to find it. And people have written about Captain Kidd and many times, right? He's endured through the ages. So why didn't anybody look more deeply?
Well, it's complicated. And Chris Lane, who's like a top pirate scholar, was nice enough to give me a blurb on his book. And the thing that he said is that, you know, what Samuel Marks has done is taken a very complex thing and told the story about as well as it can be told, which is, you know, kudos to Chris Lane. He's written some great books on piracy and the Buccaneers in particular, but it is complicated. So I'm going to make it short, though. Captain Kidd was a privateer in the Caribbean in the late, you know, throughout the 1680s and probably late 1670s, which is a licensed naval commander, but a private naval commander fighting for, you know, he was basically fighting on behalf of England, or in some cases, the French. He fought, you know.
And this was a common, right? It was a privateer. It's not a term that gets used very often now, right? But a privateer was a common position where somebody was hired privately to do what?
Well, basically, a lot of people say they're licensed pirates. And that's a little bit unfair to them. But the reality is that, you know, they were commissioned by England, France, and the imperial powers of Europe to seize the ships and seize the sailors of enemy ships during wartime. So they were commissioned during wartime to attack enemy shipping. And so Captain Kidd did that. That's what he did in the late 1670s and throughout the 1680s and all the way, you know, through most of the 1690s. He was the trusty and well-beloved Captain Kidd of the King of England, King William III himself, and was commissioned to hunt pirates in the Indian Ocean after being a buccaneer in the Caribbean throughout the 1680s.
Okay, so
a
now...
A licensed privateer.
But distinguish between a privateer and a buccaneer.
Okay, buccaneers were privateers. They weren't pirates. But they did sometimes violate their letters of marque because they were roguish, because back then in the 1600s and 1700s, there was very little difference between privateers, pirates, Royal Navy men, and wreckers, or those who were guys who would try and get the treasures from sunken ships, from storms. And there's tons of sunken ships all over the Caribbean, all over along the Straits of Florida. You know, Blackbeard even, you know, was along the Straits of Florida trying to find, you know, salvage treasure ships, Spanish treasure ships that had sunk. So all of those guys were interchangeable. So a guy might be a Royal Navy seaman 1 week, 3 months later, he might be a pirate. 3 months after that, he might be a privateer. Then maybe he's back being a pirate. Maybe he's back with the Royal Navy, you know. And, you know, a lot of them were trying to escape the Royal Navy because the Royal Navy was brutal. So a lot of people, you know, privateers was actually kind of the best of both worlds.
What do you mean brutal? What do you mean? What was brutal about it? You mean
they were abusive. Oh, yeah. Royal Navy commanders, Captain Cook, all of the famous commanders, you know, Captain Bligh is the most famous. You know, were brutal to their men. They whipped them regularly with, you know, cat of nine tails.
No.
So they would be whipped. I mean, we're talking about 100 lashes, you know.
Yeah.
You know, a dozen lashes with light. That might be for getting a sip of water from a water barrel. So they were abusive. Most of them were, you know, and there was British Royal Navy was an authoritarian and abusive system. So a lot of these... You know, Blackbeard, for instance, was an ex-Royal Navy man, okay? So Captain Kidd was a privateer who, you know, like I said, was really never a pirate, even though he's the most, you know, co-tied for the most famous pirate in history.
But that's not the reason that the story, that he gained the reputation as being a pirate. That comes in another way, right?
That comes later in the Indian Ocean Expedition when... From 1696 to 1699, when he actually is coerced. He didn't want to do the mission. He's coerced by Lord Belmont, who's going to become the governor of New York, Massachusetts Bay Colony and New Hampshire. Basically, Captain Kidd went to England in 1695, and he ends up being sort of strong-armed into he goes there to seek a royal commission as a privateer because he wants to fight the French. He's a war hero. He's New York's foremost war hero. He goes to England, and he becomes the trusty and well-beloved Captain Kidd of the King of England, King William III. But he wants to fight the French is all he wants to do. But he's roped into this by a New York friend of his named Robert Livingston, who was a part of the Livingston family in New York.
And why? Why did they want him
to? Well, because Indian Ocean piracy or the Red Sea men are now raiding the great Mughal ships in the Indian Ocean. So they wait at the mouth of the Red Sea and they take these treasure ships that are worth $20 million to $200 million. Captain Kidd is sent to the Indian Ocean to hunt these guys down. He didn't want to do it, but Lord Belmont threatened to take his ship and impress or press gang all of his seamen. And so Captain Kidd says, well, God, I don't want to take on these royal, you know, the king has signed on to this by this point, and four of the most important Whig ministers in England. And Captain Kidd's like, God, I don't, you know, he was a common born guy. Back then, you know, you didn't challenge the authority of the Whig lords or the King of England. You just said, oh, okay, I'll do what Lord Belmont says. And so Captain Kidd agreed to the mission under coercion. And then he goes to the Indian Ocean from 1696 to 1699 to hunt pirates. But his crew has other thoughts. His mutinous and rebellious crew has other thoughts.
Other thoughts? You mean they don't
want to? They want to take treasure ships. They don't want to hunt pirates who are taking treasure ships. That's risky. They want to just go take the treasure ships because the great Mughal, even these ships are, you know, even though they're heavily armed with soldiers of the great Mughal of India, they seldom fight back that hard. So they're actually easy to take. So the Americans, colonial Americans, are taking these ships from 1693 to 1698 that are worth up to $200 million. So they fought, but they resisted quickly, you know, to Henry Avery, Thomas Chew, and Robert Culliford were three of the most prominent pirates that preceded Kidd to the Indian Ocean that Kidd was sent to hunt down. So he was sent to hunt down these guys. But so, you know, the great, it's not that the great Mughals warriors were not good, bold fighters, because they were, and they were well armed with muskets, cannons. They were formidable. And, the captains of the ships were usually European, because Europeans were the best seamen, superior seamen at that point in time to, you know, the East Indian sailor weren't quite as adept. So in any case, they still were. I think a lot of it is just the terror factor of pirates. They surrender as soon as they started to lose. And remember, the pirates boarded 150 deep, pouring over the rails, and they were scary looking.
Sure,
so, you know.
Yeah, and why did England go after those ships? Why go to the Indian Ocean? Were they seeking the treasure? Was England trying to capture the treasure? Or was England trying to put a stop to something that was going on that was in some ways, you know, bad for England? Why would they care?
Well, basically what's happening is the East India Company, you know, was very powerful in India at the time. So there were in a number of cities along the coast and trading goods that were highly desirable, silks and other fabrics, right, gunpowder, right, all kinds of gold, silver, and treasures of the East that were very exotic and very sought after by, you know, in all of the European countries. So the Netherlands, you know, France, Spain, all of them wanted these products, Portugal and England, of course, wanted these products. So they had a trading network there. Captain Kidd was actually sent to hunt down basically mostly colonial American pirates sailing out of New York City and Newport, Rhode Island, and a little bit out of Boston and those ports. And
because so those pirates were stealing from the East Indian Company.
Great, well, the Great Mughal of India, they were selling, they were stealing from the great Mughal of India, who was closely connected to the East India Company. And therefore, when they're taking the great Mughal ships, they're infuriating the great Mughal and the East India Company, both of them, because they're working together. And he gets a 5% cut on, he gets a 5% cut on all commissions, the great Mughal of India. So it's a lot of money, you know?
Yeah, you bet. You bet. Got it. I see. Okay, so kid gets sent there. He doesn't want to do it, but apparently he's very good at it. And how does that make the switch? Okay. Why suddenly does this beloved Captain Kidd suddenly become the dastardly pirate?
Okay, so it's, again, it's complicated, but I'm going to go through it quickly. So his first run-in with England is when he encounters Commodore Thomas Warren in the South, you know, the South Atlantic, as he's approaching Cape Town on the coast of Africa. Thomas Warren hunts down his ship and wants to steal 40 of his seamen and impress them in the Royal Navy. So Commodore Thomas Warren, here's another example of the Royal Navy being, you know, they're pirates themselves. They want to approach 40 of Kidd's men. Now Kidd says, I'll give them to you, no problem. And he's wined and dined for a week as they're heading towards Cape Town in the South Atlantic. But one night, Captain Kidd decides, he's like, I don't want him to take my men. And so after being wined and dined by Commodore Thomas Warren aboard his ship, Kidd at night escapes. And, he doesn't want to give up the men. And so he escapes. Thomas Warren then goes, sails into Cape Town and starts spreading rumors that Captain Kidd's a pirate. So basically, in the winter of 1696, by December 1696, Captain Kidd is persona non grata to the English Empire, basically, to the East India Company, because one of the ships sailing with Commodore Thomas Warren is an East India Company ship. Its name is actually the East Indiamen, the name of the ship. So that starts Kidd's, that's when Captain Kidd starts to become, you know, oh, he's not a good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they tried to make him out falsely. They tried to make him out to be a pirate, or to say he was, they called him dishonorable. They didn't call him a pirate right away. And then he has run-ins with other East India officials. Then he goes to the mouth of the Red Sea to hunt down pirates, but he gets attacked by this Captain Barlow, who thinks he's a pirate when Captain Kidd's not a pirate. He's trying to take the pirates after they've gone after the great Mughal ships, which is legal. He has a legal commission to take any pirate.
Right.
But he is kind of, it is a little bit of a sketchy commission, but that's not his fault. He's just obeying what the King of England and the four Whig ministers, you know, want him to do. And so he gets in a little bit of a tangle there, gets a further bad reputation. And then from there, he ends up taking two ships legally because they presented French papers. He takes the Quedon Merchant and the Rouparel.
And England is at war with France at the time.
England is at war with France, and they present French papers, which makes it a French ship.
Right.
100%. During Kidd's trial,
we haven't gotten to the trial yet.
But even the English state admits that they were legal captures.
So he takes these ships. So this is a success. He's got this commission from 1696 to 99, right? Or 98.
Yeah.
And it's successful. He does what he's supposed to do.
Well, the voyage is a disaster, though. So there's a lot of things I didn't get into. One is he has he gets caught in a typhoon, type thing where the ship almost sinks. He loses 30 to 40 men on Mohelia Island in the Comoros chain to tropical disease, probably a dysentery. They call it bloody flux back then. That's a lot of sailors to use. Now he picks up 15 more guys who jump ship from the East India Company ship and another ship because they don't like that captain mistreats them. So they go with Kidd, who's a privateer who treats his crew better. And then he ends up taking these two. He takes a number of ships, but he lets them go because he can't legally take them. So he takes some other ships in the Indian Ocean before he takes the Kedah merchant Ruparel. But his crew is getting desperate because he's not taking any ships.
Right.
Until he finally takes the Kedah merchant. But by then, his crew is completely mutinous.
Does the crew on these ships that are, you know, that are legally taking other ships, do they get a slice of what they take? Is that the
Yes.
Yes.
Each get a share.
If they're not taking, they're not making any money.
That's why in addition to just being in the tropics where it's hot, running out of water all the time,
right.
The India Company also starts to fire their cannons at Kidd. So when he goes into one of the ports to get wood and water, they start unloading the cannon shore batteries on him. So he's just, he can't go anywhere, really. And even they're having run-ins with the natives, his crew, he can't control them. The bottom line is you just can't control 150 seamen who are not getting any money.
Right.
Still, he took these two ships, and they were, together they were worth somewhere between 60 and 100 million.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and one of them was, the Kedah Merchant was the much richer ship. The Ruparel, was less than 5% of what the other one was worth. But those two ships, finally he has some money for his crew, but then they mutiny on him because he won't turn pirate. He won't become full-fledged pirate on St. Mary's Island on Madagascar. And they, 97 of his crew mutiny, and he only has 17 guys who stay with him because he refuses to turn pirate.
Do they take the ship, or he's on the ship with just a reduced crew?
Well, by that point, he's sailing in as kind of the commodore of a fleet of three ships. So and then his, so they actually are on three different ships. And so he gets to keep his ship. They don't take his ship from him.
Got it.
Water, it's leaky, it's waterlogged, it was built for him in London. They built a special ship for Captain Kidd, a 34-gun ship called the Adventure Galley. But by then it was leaky because the ships that they built for the Royal Navy, they're always cheating on the wood and material. Always.
So he manages to, he limps his way home.
With, 17 guys, and he picks up like eight roguish piratey type guys, a couple of them are famous pirates, and they join his crew.
So he makes it back, and then, but now, by the time he makes it back, he is now the dastardly pirate.
He's a wanted man by the Crown of England.
He's a wanted man.
Yes, by late 1697, he's a wanted man for taking, by 1698, he's a wanted man. And so when he goes back, he gets back to Antigua in the Caribbean in the spring of 1699, and then he goes to Oyster Bay, New York. But when he goes to the Caribbean, he learns that him and his men are wanted by the crown. So he's basically the public enemy number one in the world at that point.
And he goes back to Oyster Bay because that's where he lives?
Well, he's by this time Lord Belmont, who's the one who threatened to take his ship in London, is now the governor, the royal governor of New York, Massachusetts Bay Colony, and New Hampshire. And so he's kind of he's the governor of all three, but he's at this point, he's not in New York. He's gone on to Boston after being in New York for a year. So Captain Kidd goes to Oyster Bay. He locates his lawyer and his wife in New York City, and he arranges for them to meet him so that he can try and go secure a pardon, because Lord Belmont's his business partner. So Lord Belmont is involved. Remember, he's financed his expedition to the Indian Ocean. So Lord Belmont, Kidd's like, okay, I want to strike a deal with Belmont. It's the best I can do. So he gets his lawyer, who's the top criminal lawyer in America, James Emot, who built Trinity Church in downtown New York. This is the thing, is piracy. No one cared about pirates back then. They were the good guys. They brought money in.
Yeah.
They brought money into the colonies because there were no banks. They built Trinity Church. They financed colleges. College of William and Mary was financed by one of the guys on cruise ship who was a pirate
Oh, wow.
from Madagascar, because Captain Kidd had to get anybody to sail a ship back. He needed 25 deckhands at least.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that guy, you know, built William and Mary, a pirate, you know.
Okay, so, but so, okay, so now he's, he doesn't, he makes a, or he tries to make a deal with, he gets his lawyer to try to make a deal with Wellington.
Lord Belmont.
Belmont.
Lord Belmont. It was in Boston. So James Emaut rides 65 miles from, like, you know, southern Rhode Island all the way to Boston, negotiates a deal with Belmont, then comes back with a kind of a go-between named Duncan Campbell, who was a, you know, one of the first publishers in America was Duncan Campbell, the Boston Newsletter. Well, the precursor to the Boston Newsletter. So he rides back and becomes a go-between because Captain Kidd knows him and so does Belmont. And then James Emaut kind of seals the deal, but then returns to New York, which was kind of a mistake. So Captain Kidd is lured into Boston by Lord Belmont, who gives him a letter writing, says, I'll give you a pardon. Just come in. You can trust me. But of course, you can't trust Lord Belmont. He's, you know, he's looking out for his own interests and he's protecting the Whig lords and the king.
So he gets
arrested within 5 days of Kidd arriving to Boston. By then, Kidd's with his two daughters and his wife. So Sarah Kidd, who's an amazing woman, my ninth great grandmother, is at this point has joined Kidd in Long Island Sound and is with him for 3 weeks, you know, as he's figuring out how he can go get a deal in Boston with Lord Belmont. And she's advising him. She's very involved in all this.
Yeah. And you made mention of, well, no, in the book, you made more than mention, right? You thought it was important to talk about their relationship, his relationship with his wife, Sarah. What, why? Was she significant in this drama?
Yeah, Sarah Kidd's a pretty amazing woman because she, you know, she was a socialite that in New York that was married to this guy, William Cox. Yeah, Captain Kidd was her third husband. He was married to a wealthy flower merchant in New York City who was twice her age. I'm not sure she really loved him. It was a forced marriage by her father. Her father was a sea captain, too. So she came from a mariner's family. Her name was Sarah Bradley. And so Captain Kidd knew her by 1688. And, you know, they kind of had a love affair when she was married to Cox. And then Cox died. Captain Kidd is in the Caribbean fighting the French and is nowhere near and has his ship stolen because he won't turn pirate. So he's stuck in the Caribbean and unable to get back to Sarah until 1691. And when he returns in March 1691, he's married to her, you know, by May, within 2 months of returning, and she has another husband. So that guy dies. 2 days later, she's married to Captain Kidd.
Oh, wow.
So part of the drama of the story is, did Captain Kidd bump off John Ort, who was a Dutch merchant that Sarah married purely out of desperation because Kidd wasn't in New York at that point, and Cox is long dead, and she can't get any of her inheritance because it's tied up by Jacob Leisler, who's the acting governor of New York at that point, but he's kind of seized power and is not the crown appointed official. So there's a lot of complicated storylines, but in general, Captain Kidd loves Sarah. They got married in 1691 in May. And then when, you know, she's there by, you know, with him throughout all these years in New York, very prominent family that were hobnobbing with the wealthiest New Yorkers, Sarah right. and Captain Kidd were, yeah, they were hanging out with the governor. Captain Kidd knew seven governors and lieutenant governors during the course of his life.
So at some point,
or enemies with some of them, but
prior to his fall from grace, he's a well respected fellow.
Oh, he's a leading gentleman and citizen of New York. He's the trusty and well beloved Captain Kidd of the King of England.
So yeah,
he's also very rich. So he owned, you know, he didn't just spend all his money on liquor and women, you know, he was out buying real estate, you know,
not really.
Late 1680s and 1690s. And also Sarah was wealthy too. So when they combined what their properties and everything, their income, you know, they were some of the wealthiest people in New York
mm-hmm.
at that point in the 1690s.
Well, okay. So, you know, the next $65,000, $4,000 question, the folklore says buried treasure. Was there actually buried treasure? Did anybody ever find it? And, you know, is it somewhere, is it hidden somewhere in your house?
I know where all of buried treasure is, billions of dollars, but I'm just keeping it there, but, you know, for a rainy day. So Captain Kidd's, the buried treasure, Captain Kidd, first of all, is the main person who has given us our buried treasure mythology with pirates. Okay. Other pirates buried things for short-term durations. Captain Kidd's created the whole mythology of buried treasure. And, you know, so he created that myth. Now, why did he create it? And what does it really mean? When he came back to Long Island Sound, so he was bouncing around between Oyster Bay and Gardner's Island and Block Island and even southern Rhode Island. He did not trust Lord Belmont. Why would you? Belmont tried to coerce him into doing the expedition in the first place. He didn't trust him. So he leaves his money with Thomas Paine, who's a prominent sea captain who built Trinity Church in, you know, near Newport, Rhode Island, so southern Rhode Island on the coast. Thomas Paine was a prominent privateer, fought the French, he's a war hero, but he was roguish. A lot of these guys, Captain Kidd was a little roguish. They're all a little roguish back then. His other friend was Thomas Clark, who was a New York governor's council member. He was a city coroner. He was an ex-sea captain and privateer, too. They all had, you know, privateers were guys who just, sometimes it'd be like, you know, you might be walking down the streets of New York and the French are attacking, you know, Long Island and, oh, okay, let's go. We're jump on the ship and let's go fight. You're a privateer. You might be, you know, doing your day job, you know,
yeah,
David Bryan giving the talk, and then they have to pull you out and you got to go fight the French.
It's like being a volunteer fireman, right?
Exactly.
Volunteer pirate.
Yeah. And you got to go fight and do it quickly too.
Yeah.
So Captain Kidd, Thomas Clark, he also buried treasure. This is where the buried treasure mythology comes, on Gardner's Island.
He did. He actually buried treasure.
Yes, he actually buried treasure on Gardner's Island with the permission of John Gardner. Him and John Gardner owned the island.
So did they ever dig it up?
Well, what happened is Lord Belmont was like, you know, with Sherlock Holmes. He tracked down every shred of gold and silver that we know of. He got it from, you know, he didn't get it. Thomas Paine had like seven or eight gold bars that Sarah didn't have any money because Lord Belmont robbed her of everything, even though all of her money was legitimate. She didn't have any, you know, when he arrested Kidd, he came and seized all the belongings from Duncan Campbell's house in Boston.
Oh.
So that was the go-between, Duncan Campbell.
Right.
And so he took everything of Sarah and her maid, her poor housekeeper. They took all of her money. They took everything from Duncan Campbell because Captain Kidd had given Duncan Campbell a few rewards. So Sarah Kidd's money has nothing to do with Captain Kidd. Lord Belmont just seized everything from everybody. So he got it from Thomas Clark, took all the money. He got it from John Gardner. He threatened John Gardner, and John Gardner came and delivered all the treasure. So basically, Lord Belmont pretty much rolled up and got all, I won't say all, but most of the buried treasure.
Got it.
And distributed treasure, really.
But the mythology endured, right? I mean, the treasure is still out here. People were seeking treasure for years, right?
No, they're still seeking it today. People are still going to the East China Sea, you know, and the Indian Ocean and Madagascar and the Caribbean down the Eastern Seaboard. No, they're still treasure crazed people. They're everywhere. They're still. Yeah. Captain Kidd mythology is still going strong.
That's amazing, actually. That's quite amazing.
And that's what I say in the last part of my book. Last 15 pages of my book covers a lot of that treasure mythology kind of stuff, you know.
The other thing that stood out was, well, I don't know if you'll like the way this I put this, but there's a way in which, you know, Captain Kidd was ahead of his time. He may have been one of the original DEI people. Right, he treated his he treated his, at least from what I've read, not just at the book, but background, he was willing to hire people that other people weren't willing to hire because they were Muslim, they were Jewish, they were whatever. He treated them well, fairly, and so yeah, in some ways was socially ahead of his time.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question for his time, he was, you know, what we would be today probably be called a progressive, but it's because of seafaring culture. Seamen were worldly. Seamen sailed with black men. They sailed with Indians in the Caribbean. He was a buccaneer too, so he came from buccaneer culture. And you know, privateer culture was more egalitarian than certainly Royal Navy culture.
Right. So Captain they were just poor employees.
Yeah, he came from that background where it was a meritocracy. If you were a good seaman or a good fighter or a cook, one of the three, Captain Kidd hired black men, Native Americans. He took a Jewish guy who had no sailing experience and was elderly, Benjamin Franks, and let him just join him and sail to the Indian Ocean, you know, for free. Just like he said, sure, I'll take you. And I mean, that was a liability because Benjamin Franks got sick on Mohelet Island. He almost died from that tropical disease outbreak. So he was a burden. And Captain Kidd took him. Captain Kidd hired a Ceylonese cook on the journey who would have been, you know, very dark skinned. And at that point, you know, it wouldn't have been African, but he would have been, you know, clearly. So Captain Kidd, you know, color didn't mean anything to Captain Kidd. And a lot of the pirate and buccaneer culture, remember, privateer culture, seafaring culture was egalitarian. The docks were a little more of a liberal kind of progressive place where, you know, it wasn't how you were born,
right?
You know, like in England, it was, you know, what can you sail? Can you fight? Can you cook? You know, cooking. Yeah, you remember, cooking was important. You know, so Captain Kidd was, and he did things for, you know, some children. He did things for seafaring wives to recover their money. So you're right. I dug into that in my book because I want people to see the real Captain Kidd, not the Captain Kidd of mythology. Was created by the English Crown and the East India Company. They made him out to be, they called him a villain of all nations and an arch pirate.
And was there ever an effort anywhere to sort of set the record straight? And did England, you know how sometimes hundreds of years later, governments will say, you know what, we screwed up back then. So was there a king or a queen along the way that set the record straight or no?
Not really. So Captain Kidd's reputation as the, you know, they called him notorious arch pirate.
Yeah.
Arch villain.
He was a villain.
Yeah. And a villain of all nations. Like just as, you know, and a liar and a thief. Belmont called him, you know, once he arrested him, Belmont called him the biggest liar and thief in the world. Come on. Okay, so Captain Kidd, though, his reputation was destroyed by the Crown. They created a false image. They rigged the trial. So we haven't gotten to that yet, but I'll just say that.
I'm looking at time, so. Yeah. So.
Okay, they rigged the trial.
There was a trial. They arrested them. They tried them, etc.
Yeah, and they rigged it. They rigged it, and they stole his evidence, his two French passes. So they, because for the reason, simple reason, they didn't catch Henry Avery or Thomas Chew, or the biggest pirates in the Indian Ocean. But Kidd surrendered. See, the mistake he made is surrendering to Belmont.
Yeah.
And then he became the only captured pirate. Thomas Chew was killed. So the Great Mughal, one of the ships, did fight back, and he got disemboweled, you know. So he was caught, and others kind of died and weren't as important. Henry Avery never got caught. So that's the guy that really kind of hurt Kidd. So Captain Kidd's reputation was sort of destroyed. As far as historians go, they've always been kind of either kind of like, oh, no, Kidd wasn't a pirate, pretty much kind of coming out where I come out. I don't say didn't commit piracy, though. Remember, there's one ship that he took. Well, he didn't take. His crew took when they were on a separate vessel. And remember, he couldn't, when he was sailing three different ships, two of which were legal captures, he couldn't keep track of what his crew was up to. So he either looked away with one of the ships, and he also accidentally killed his gunner, who was his mutinous gunner, William Moore, was leading a mutiny, and Kidd got in an altercation with him and hit him with an empty bucket, and he did die, William Moore. So Captain Kidd technically could be guilty of looking the other way to piracy, which is piracy because he's the commander, and manslaughter, right. Worst case, manslaughter right. With a wooden bucket incident. But yeah. That's the worst case. No hanging by any means.
Right. Right.
So people are divided on, he's a notorious arch pirate and villain, which shockingly some scholars, not scholars, but writers, I will say, sort of cling to that outdated notion, which has no credibility to me.
It's sexier, I'm sure.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is people are pirate scholars, so they kind of want them to be piratey a little bit. And then the other school is the school that's, no, he's pretty much an innocent guy. He was a good guy. But, he has some flaws. He was a little roguish, and that's more where I come out, But there is a part in Captain Kidd's society today, a movement in England, and to try and get Parliament to formally recognize him and give him a pardon. And I think Brian Cox of Succession is a big Captain Kidd fan, and as I think is part of that movement to pardon Captain Kidd. That was sort of interesting. Yeah, so Captain Kidd lives on today. He really does.
Actually, yeah. Well, so what do you want people to know about Kidd? I mean, obviously read the book, but why should somebody read, if they're interested in Captain Kidd, obviously, but is there a bigger lesson out of this? Is there something that, do you just want to set the record straight about your relative, or is there something larger there?
No, I didn't set out to set the record straight or vindicate Captain Kidd when I wrote the book. So I at the same time, I wanted to write, once I got into it, I was like, I really wanted to write one of the best books and most scholarly and comprehensive books on Captain Kidd ever written. So I really made that my goal. And I wanted to be fair. There's things about him I don't like. When you look back, to the people in the 1600s, they do some stuff that, today, we're not exactly completely comfortable with. So my thing was not to go vindicate at the same time, I try and present, the evidence as solidly as I can and shed light on his true character. Because I think I capture the essence of him, as well as anybody before. But I come out sympathetic, but I don't say he's innocent. At the end of the day, technically, you got to say, there's a difference between committing piracy, a gray area, and being an outlaw pirate.
Right.
There's a huge difference and distinction. Right. So Captain Kidd is technically guilty of, potentially manslaughter and piracy, looking the other way. Let's be honest about what he really did. When your guys, he put all of his wildest and most desperate rogues on one another ship. And that ship captured the Portuguese galleon. And he had just been attacked by the Portuguese. So that's, you got to put it all in the right, which is my book has all the details, which is he was attacked by two Portuguese ships who unleashed on him with 66 cannons. And he fought back and he just annihilated the smaller ship. He outfoxed the ships. He was a great sea captain. He outfoxed the bigger ship and tried to get away. And then the smaller ship kept after him. And then he slowed down and engaged it and just annihilated them. So that Portuguese ship limped into port with like 30 or 40 guys badly wounded or dead. Because Captain Kidd outfoxed two ships and took on the weaker of the two. That was his sign. Still wasn't, it's just as powerful as he was. So he was a clever military commander too.
Sounds like it. And an obviously capable seaman. Right, I mean,
sailing the Indian Ocean was not easy. Commodore Thomas Warren of the Royal Navy lost, 100 men there and couldn't find the continent of Africa.
You're sailing without any of the, sort of navigational equipment that make it pretty easy to find things these days. So,
yeah.
So, well, this is intriguing. And, you wanted to say your last bit about this book.
Oh, well, no, I think so. So I didn't write the book to vindicate Kid. I wanted to write it so you really feel what this guy felt, and you know, the corruption of the English crown. I mean, everyone's agreed to that. So there's no disagreement on that. Where people disagree and is that they think he was more piratey from the beginning, you know, because he was a buccaneer, but they mistake buccaneers for pirates. They weren't pirates. They were just like pirates. And some of them were, you know, but they always had a license and they were always sticking it to Spain or Portugal.
Yeah.
Catholic Spain or Portugal, not taking the ships of all nations. Well, they were different. And so Captain Kidd, he just never embraced being a pirate. So was he guilty? Yeah, he's a little bit guilty, but everyone else around him was so much worse. It's like the Hannibal Lecter factor, you know. He's the good guy, you know, not the prison guy or, you know, Buffalo Bill or what. Now Captain Kidd is not Hannibal Lecter because he's a good guy. But everyone else around him, like Hannibal Lecter, is much more evil than he is. You know, they're all trying to get his treasure. They're all trying to protect their reputations. They're all, you know, they're all corrupt and, you know, they're making up lies about him, right and left.
Yeah, Wellington. I mean, not Wellington. I keep wanting to say that. Belmont. I don't know why I keep going to Wellington. But Belmont was an out-and-out thief.
Yeah, Belmont was trying to figure out how he could get Kidd's treasure and keep a third of it for himself and not get in trouble with his sponsors. Because he was part of the sponsor of the Indian Ocean Expedition, he was entitled to only like a, you know, like 8% cut or something. But because he was the governor, he was also the chief admiralty, head of the admiralty prize court in America. He was that high ranking. He was completely corrupt. Belmont's much worse than, you know, Captain Kidd by far.
Exactly. That's the piece. And he wasn't on trial.
No.
So.
No.
Well, Samuel Marcus, let's say the title again. And again, I will put it up on the screen. Captain Kidd, A True Story. I like the title. A True Story of Treasure and Betrayal.
Well, you know, to be honest, I had a tale of an epic tale of triumph, treasure, and revenge, because Captain Kidd had a lot of years of triumph.
Yeah. Right?
Well, you kind of forget that he was a hero, but they took that out. Everyone just likes treasure and betrayal, you know? They want to boil it down to just the piratey stuff, you know?
Right.
That's the way it is. Everyone loves their pirates.
It's an interesting phenomenon, right? Everybody loves pirates. They don't really, but they, I mean, you know.
Because they're like golden age pirates.
Exactly.
They're like 1650 to 1730. Maybe a little later, but they love their golden age pirates. Captain Kidd, Blackbeard, and Henry Morgan.
Right, exactly. Well, Samuel Marcus, thank you so much for spending time and being willing to talk about this. Hold up that book again, even though it's going to be on the screen. And congratulations. And is there a next, and is there something in the pipe, right, in the pipeline right now? Are you working on something else?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the process of finalizing my next book, which just happens to be on the King William's War and the Iroquois from 1689 to 1701. So it's the same time period of Captain Kidd, but it's basically the last of the Mohicans. King William's War and the Iroquois and Colonel Peter Schuyler, who knew Captain Kidd.
Oh, wow.
And knew a lot of the characters in my book. He lived in Albany, you know, he was Colonel Peter Schuyler's very famous Schuyler family, you know, so, Alexander Hamilton married into the Schuyler family. Philip Schuyler was a general during the American Revolution. So, it's basically on Colonel Peter Schuyler and the Iroquois, King William's War. So I'm finalizing that and getting ready to submit that.
Good for you. Good for you.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.